This is the Financial Exchange with Chuck Zotta and Mike Armstrong. Your exclusive look at business and financial news affecting your day, your city, your world. Stay informed and up to date about economic and market trends, plus breaking business news every day. This is the Financial Exchange with Chuck Zotta and Mike Armstrong.
Well, we've got a, not a sell-off, but just kind of a little bit of a wobble in markets right now. The Dow's off 54 points. The S&P is off 4. NASDAQ down 10. So it's pretty flat. Not a whole lot of movement here. But it's Chuck, Paul Lane, and Tucker Silva with you today. We've got the 10-year Treasury at 1.46%. Oil at $70.90 a barrel. Gold at $18.84 an ounce. And Bitcoin, whatever. 37,034 per coin, if that's your thing. Paul, top story for the hour. Three FDA advisors resign over the agency's approval of the Alzheimer's drug from Biogen. Aducanumab, I believe, is how it's pronounced. It's going to be marketed as Aduhelm because that's just easier to say. But I found this quote from Aaron Kesselheim, who is a professor of medicine at Harvard Med, also practices at Brigham and Women's Hospital, submitted his resignation yesterday after 6 years on this committee. Quote, "This might be the worst approval decision that the FDA has made that I can remember." Not mincing words. He's not going to be invited back.
This is extremely concerning. If you read into some of the data and the concerns over this particular drug, you and I talked on the show earlier this week when it got approved that there was not a lot of statistical information that backed the effectiveness of this particular drug. And it really was a 50-50 going into whether it would be approved or not. A lot of indications early on stated that there wasn't a lot of evidence that this actually delayed some of the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease. It's been 18 years since we've seen an approval. And if you read further, the FDA's decision, some of the pieces of this, Chuck, are very alarming. One in particular is this idea that Biogen has 9 years to do this confirmatory trial to prove out some of the efficacy.
They couldn't do it.
And over the cost for this product, $56,000, and the fact that doctors are going to have to be on the hook whether or not to prescribe it, with some of the side effects that are tied to brain symptoms, it's concerning. It's very concerning.
I'm going to just quote from the New York Times article. The committee had found that the evidence did not convincingly show that Aduhelm could slow cognitive decline and that the drug could cause potentially serious side effects of brain swelling and brain bleeding. None of the 11 members of the committee considered the drug ready for approval. 10 voted against, and one was uncertain. Something smells, doesn't it?
It does. That was my exact takeaway. This doesn't add up to me, Chuck. There's got to be some sort of pressure. Something's going on that this got approved.
There was a lot of pressure from patient groups who just want anything to be able to get out to Alzheimer's patients that may potentially improve options. I mean, if you have, here's the thing, when we talk about drug development, especially in this space, if you have a family member who's got Alzheimer's right now and they're in the early stages of it, the difference between something that could potentially help now and waiting a few years, that's life-changing.
It is.
You know, it's a few years in Alzheimer's is the whole game in a lot of cases. And so there's a ton of pressure from patient groups. I'm sure there's pressure from Biogen, obviously. They've spent, you know, decades working on this now, trying to get it to work. But the fact that not a single member of this independent advisory committee wanted to vote in favor of this drug, and three out of the 11 members have now quit. A quarter of the committee quit in response to this one decision.
Because they were so ticked off about the way it went. And I feel it ties into what you're saying. There's so much desperation in the space because Alzheimer's is such a awful disease. And it's been 18 years, as I mentioned. There's only five medications out there to treat this. And really what they do, the ones that are out there, is only stave it off for a couple months. It's really not very impactful. So out of desperation, it seems as if the FDA, this approval was a bit rushed, didn't weigh the data. And these members are quite concerned. And particularly when you talk about some of these side effects, the brain swelling and brain bleeding, not something to mess around with.
And another one of the members of the committee, Dr. Joel Perlmutter, who is a neurologist at Washington University of St. Louis, said approval of a drug that is not effective has serious potential to impair further research into new treatments. In addition, the implementation of this therapy will potentially cost billions of dollars that could otherwise be spent either developing better evidence for the drug or other therapeutic interventions. And so, again, when a quarter of this advisory committee quits as a result of one decision, that gets my ears, you know, kind of perked up, just because I'm a big believer. Pay attention to what people do, not what people say. When people are quit, I mean, again, this is probably one of the most prestigious roles that you can have in drug development in the world. I mean, the FDA, basically what they approve is, it's the gold standard. Like, when you're talking about this role, and three of the people working on this independent committee said, we're done because of this.
Not to mention the scientific impact you have, the financial impact that you have. We saw Biogen stock absolutely take off from $267. It's now trading at $404 a share. I'm all for shareholders benefiting when there is a scientific improvement that's made through an FDA approval. But you read some of this information, you start to question whether these gains really were justified.
So it's, again, I've talked to a few different people that work in the biotech space in Massachusetts. Of the people that I've talked to, three of them, not one of them has said that this should have been approved.
I'm with you. And if you're a patient or you have a loved one that's a patient, I would be very, very cautious in proceeding with this drug.
You just,
I wouldn't.
It's really hard to know what to do in this case. So we'll see what happens. But I cannot remember a decision from the FDA that has been as controversial as this one. I've never seen anything like this when it comes to the FDA. Homeowners got $2 trillion richer during the first 3 months of the year. Hey, do you remember that article from a couple days ago that ProPublica published about how Jeff Bezos, his net worth went up by $18 billion last year, but he didn't pay taxes on it because he didn't sell anything?
Yes.
Do you think that homeowners who got $2 trillion richer, should we all have to pay more in taxes because the price of our homes went up?
Absolutely not.
Then why should Jeff Bezos? I'm just pointing out how disingenuous that whole piece was, arguing that, oh, his true tax rate was so low because he didn't sell any of his stock or whatever.
Those pieces are so common. If you look at CNBC or other financial publications out there, it's their favorite thing to do. Go after Warren Buffett's tax rate, and it's just to get people mad.
Yeah, because here's the thing. Homeowners got $2 trillion richer during the first 3 months of this year. Capital gains tax rate, even for, you know, the lowest possible rate, once you get above that 0%, it's 15% for long-term capital gains.
Mm-hmm.
Should Americans have to pay $300 billion in taxes because their homes went up in value in the first quarter?
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's outrageous.
That it just
because it's on paper. It's right on paper. It's just like a stock appreciating. We just talked about Biogen. It's not a gain until you make the sale, till you realize it.
It's like, here's what it's equivalent to. Let's say that I sell Hot Wheels. Okay, and I make a model. What do you think a Hot Wheel goes for these days? $6?
$9.99.
Okay. Are you going to tax me before I sell that? No, you tax it on the transaction
right. When
it happens.
Right.
I don't realize any revenue until I sell it. So if I own a home and it goes up in value, or if I own a stock and it goes up in value and I don't sell it, why are you going to tax me just for owning it? Because if we're just going to tax people for owning things, then what's the incentive for anyone to make anything? Because now I'm getting taxed before I even sell it. I don't have any money to pay those taxes. And then the whole thing breaks down.
Yep.
So I just want to point out how disingenuous that article from ProPublica was. I think they do some really good work sometimes, but that article was a hack job.
Right.
It was just brutal. Anyways, homeowners with an additional $2 trillion in home equity from this spring just because prices keep going up.
For me, the big takeaway is the amount of houses out there, we're in such a better place than we were in 2007, 2008, leading up to some of the appreciation that we saw before the real estate market crash. The mortgage requirements are much more stringent for those people buying homes out there. And there's also just a lot more qualified buyers. There's more demand, but less inventory out there. The home market residentially, we know is in an extremely strong place. And we're not going to see a lot of these foreclosures that we thought we would saw. That's another takeaway that I had, is because of some of these equity gains, so few houses are underwater.
I remember very clearly, I think it was back in October of last year, I was out, I was walking around, and at the time, I remember I got a notification on my phone that I think we were up to about 6 million homes that were in these forbearance programs at the time. That number as of June 1st is now down to 2 million.
Yep.
And the ones that have come off, it's not like we've had 4 million foreclosures and defaults. They've been able to exit and, you know, start paying their mortgages or sell the properties. And so, yeah, you still have 2 million of these that are in these bailout programs. But on a lot of these, because prices have risen, even if someone's in trouble, they can sell the house without having to do a short sale like they did after the financial crisis. And so Barry and I have talked about it, and I'm of the opinion, yeah, you still get 2 million homeowners in these programs. I don't think this is going to be something that brings down the housing market or even causes a blip.
No, and it's not going to add to inventory either, to your point. And that's something that we felt at the beginning of the pandemic that would add to it. It's initial takeaway. People are going to be in trouble. They're not going to be able to keep their homes. There's going to be a ton of different options out there when we come out of this, because people are not going to be able to maintain the home that they live in. And that's just not the case.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we've got trivia right after this.
This is your home for the latest business and financial news in New England and around the country. This is the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
Hi, this is Mike Armstrong, and I know that many of you listening today may be retired or getting ready to retire. Having the right retirement income strategy is paramount to being able to live the way you want without the worry of running out of money in your later years. Understanding tax consequences should also be a major part of your plan. What happens if you get pushed into a higher tax bracket as a result of an inheritance or business sale? With rules changing regarding required distributions from traditional IRAs, you might want to consider exploring a Roth conversion so you'll be able to keep more of that money. Our new free guide available now, called Building an Income Distribution Strategy, outlines these and other tax-related issues in great detail. Call us at 800-393-4001 and get your free copy today. Let us explain how taxes can have a significant effect on your income strategy if you aren't prepared. Again, 800-393-4001, or download the guide right now at armstrongadvisory.com.
Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, and advisory services offered through Securities America Advisors Incorporated. Securities America and its representatives do not provide tax advice. Therefore, it is important to coordinate with your tax advisor regarding your specific situation. Michael Armstrong, representative. Armstrong Advisory Group and the Securities America companies are unaffiliated.
The Financial Exchange is live on Facebook, so make sure to like our page and watch the guys break down the latest on the markets every day beginning at 10 on the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
Trivia today is brought to you by Southern Airways Express. Flights to Nantucket are now available with a brand new schedule from Hanscom Field. Take the easy route to Nantucket. Fly Southern Airways Express from Norwood, Providence, New Bedford, and now Hanscom Field off 128. Fast flights, low fares. Book today at iFlySouthern.com. Friday, we always do movie trivia. Started out as bad action movie trivia, and I think we're going to continue with that today. Tucker, can you pull up the Rotten Tomatoes for Stargate when you get a chance?
We'll do that right now.
We're doing trivia today based on the Roland Emmerich movie Stargate. From, I think, 1995, maybe 94.
I don't know.
Early to mid-90s, I believe, is when it's from. But here is the trivia question. In Stargate, when trying to get off the alien planet, what is the word represented by the final symbol to open the Stargate? Text us at 63566. In Stargate, when trying to get off the alien planet, what is the word represented by the final symbol to open the Stargate? We'll do the second person with the right answer, because this movie's from a long time ago.
Open Sesame.
We may not have one right answer.
No, Paul, we've only had, I think, two questions in our history that have gotten no right answer.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this was 53% on Rotten Tomatoes. 73% of the audience did like it, though, as opposed to critics. Decent cast.
Couple good high-end cast members. Kurt Russell, James Spader.
Yep. That's about it.
That's about it. Yep.
1994.
Yep. PG-13. It's a very meh movie.
$70 million at the box office.
That's domestically?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So mid-budget action flick that not very great, but that's our trivia question today. Second person with the right answer taking home a $50 gas card and also entered to win the pair of round-trip tickets to Nantucket on Southern Airways Express. Paul, what is the world's most successful real estate investor buying, and how do I do the same thing? That's the question asked in this article from Bloomberg.
John Gray, who is a part of Blackstone, which is just an absolute behemoth when you're talking about real estate, there's an article in here that goes through some questions on what he would be buying. And really the biggest takeaway that I have from it, Chuck, is this idea of investing in areas of the country that are very prevalent in this tech shift movement. So Austin, Texas, for example, or the state of Texas in general, is quite popular. And then he also still believes in the cities, you know, San Francisco and New York. What are your thoughts? Sort of one of the common refrains that we've heard consistently post-pandemic is everyone's retreating from New York City. Everyone's leaving San Francisco. And I just don't buy that. I think they'll come back quite quickly.
I think there's a difference between New York City and San Francisco.
Okay.
I think New York City has a monopoly on being New York City.
Right.
It is the entertainment and finance mecca of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think San Francisco has a rep for being Silicon Valley, where all of the tech companies go. But in a world where you now have a distributed workforce with more remote, I think San Francisco's pull is not as strong as New York's.
Fair. Fair.
I think that if we need John Gray to tell us that Austin, Texas, and New York City are going to be popular over the next decade, What are we talking about here? I can't stand articles that are framed this way because, A, the whole headline is all about, you know, what's the world's most successful real estate investor is buying. The implication is you should do the same thing.
Yeah.
Which I hate that, number one. And second, his big ideas are Austin, Texas, and New York City. I need him for that.
Chuck, I was really struggling to come up with something because the ideas that were presented in this article, now maybe he's like a poker player that doesn't want to show his true hand and he's just giving very generic answers, but there was very little takeaways that blew my mind, things that you and I could not have thought of.
Like, what would have been interesting to me if he was sitting there going, you know what I'm buying up right now? Farmland in Bangladesh. I would have said, okay, this is interesting. Like, what's the unique idea that you have here that no one else knows about? No, the ideas are Austin, Texas, and New York City. New York.
New York.
That's, I didn't get much out of it. Tesla, the first versions of the Model S Plaid are being delivered to early buyers today. This is the one that goes 0 to 60 in under 2 seconds.
That's insane.
Real quick.
Which is absolutely... I can't even imagine what that feels like, other than scary.
My Camry is probably like 8 seconds, I think.
Yeah, imagine... it gets to that point 4 times as fast as your car.
I just floor it and like nothing happens.
Here's a question that I actually have on electric vehicles at this point. And I understand the attraction to conventional sports cars. But given the fact that sports car owners, A, they prioritize performance over anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes you're not taking the sports car out for a cross country trip. You know, it's not going on a 3000 mile journey. It's, hey, let me find some good back roads and take it out for the afternoon. So yep. Range isn't a problem. I'm a little surprised that there aren't more companies developing high end electric sports cars because it's a market where the price point fits, the range fits, and the performance fits.
Also a profitable
and it would
way
be profitable.
Of selling cars.
Doesn't Porsche have one?
They do.
Hmm.
But there's no, you know, electric version of the Corvette.
Right.
There's no electric Ferrari. It just feels like it's a missed opportunity. And I know that I know that the core demo is, hey, we want these because they're gas-powered vehicles. But it would seem to me that it would be an easy way to kind of ease into building EVs, but you're just not seeing much of it. Tucker, what are you giggling about?
Just some of the guesses on your trivia.
Oh, I haven't looked at them yet.
Yeah. You'll get a decent chuckle.
I'll take a look in a little bit. Let's take a look at markets, Paul, and see if anything interesting is happening. It's not. The Dow is off 49 points. The S&P is off less than one.
Yawn.
The NASDAQ is up 17. 10-year Treasury still at 1.47%. Oil is at 71 a barrel. A little bit of pushing in energy prices. Oil stocks continuing to get a little tailwind there. We got gold off 14 an ounce right now to 1881. So very quiet day as we head into the weekend here. And you know, you have to think probably the next few weeks not going to be a ton of activity. There's no major economic data. I mean, you get some housing stuff coming out, and then you kick off earnings season as you get into that post 4th of July period. But again, July is normally a pretty quiet time as well. Not too many people heavily active during that time.
The only thing that I could think of would be any Fed commentary that comes out next week when they meet that is sort of contrary to what they've stated in the past, if they continue to reiterate their same thoughts. But I don't really anticipate that happening.
Let's take a quick break here. When we return, we've got your trivia answers, both right and wrong. And then we're going to be talking about the short-term rental market in Nantucket heating up and what's going on there.
The Financial Exchange is live on Facebook, so make sure to like our page and watch the guys break down the latest on the markets every day beginning at 10 on the Financial Exchange Radio Network. If the Wall Street roller coaster has you scratching your head, check out our brand new podcast, Dumb Questions for Smart Money, an easy way to gain some knowledge about the latest trends in the business and financial industry without the brain pain that comes with it. Listen and learn to Dumb Questions for Smart Money. Subscribe today on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps.
This segment of the Financial Exchange is brought to you in part by Stony Brook Water. If you want the purest, freshest water for your home or office, call Stony Brook today and get one of their new Ion coolers. I am drinking their water right now as we speak. Call 978-381-1476 and sign up for a free trial today. Again, that's 978-381-1476 or visit them online at stonybrookwater.com/trial.
Last segment, we asked a trivia question. The question was, in the movie Stargate, when trying to get off the alien planet, what is the word represented by the final symbol to open the Stargate? It was not abracadabra. It was not open sesame. It was not open the effing gateway now. And it was not... was this a response? Someone just put Chevron on here?
I think that's a guess.
ExxonMobil?
That's a guess.
I'm trying to figure out what's going on
Chevron.
Here.
Chevron!
But no, it was not Chevron. The correct answer was, in fact, Victory. Who had that answer, Paul?
Our winner today is Scott. Scott from Chelmsford has won the $50 gas card and came up with that Victory text. He was going to be registered for the round trip tickets to Southern Airways Express, but we had David from Hyannis. He won the two round trip tickets to Nantucket. Trivia is brought to you by Southern Airways Express. Flights to Nantucket are now available with a brand new schedule from Hanscom Field. Take the easy route to Nantucket. Fly Southern Airways Express from Norwood, Providence, New Bedford, and now Hanscom Field off Route 128. Fast flights, low fares. Book today at iFlySouthern.com and head out to Nantucket.
Speaking of Nantucket, great segue here.
Well done.
Nantucket's short-term rental war is pitting neighbor against neighbor. This is not an article from the Boston Globe, not an article from the Providence Journal.
I was surprised by that.
This is from the Wall Street Journal. So this is making national news here. And there's a proposal there that if any Nantucket residents are listening, there's a proposal there called Article 90, which would significantly reduce the number and duration of short-term rentals on the island through places like Airbnb and Vrbo and the like. And it has people really, really passionate about this. I mean, you've got people who, I'm going to quote Tobias Glidden, who owns Glidden's Island Seafood. The family's owned it since 1898, so his family's been on the island for 125 years. And he says that, quote, investors who own short-term rentals are extracting money from the island like they're extracting squid from our local waters. On the other hand, you have Linda Williams, who calls Article 90 abhorrent, saying that her 82-year-old uncle depends on income from short-term rentals to maintain the family's longtime seasonal house on the island. We may lose my family's summer home. It's a really complicated issue to try to navigate because Nantucket, unlike other parts of Massachusetts, Nantucket is wholly dependent on tourism for it. That's the whole gig with the economy,
right?
That's the whole thing, basically. Yeah, there's some fishing and stuff that happens, but it is a tourism based economy.
I'm going there in 2 weeks.
You staying in an Airbnb?
No, a bed and breakfast.
Okay.
Sorry.
What? It's okay.
Just make it up.
I mean, yes. As a matter of fact, I am.
Well, I was going to, but then
I read the Article 90.
What do you think about this, Paul?
Chuck, it appears as if the two people behind this, I was mentioning before during the break, that you've got a billionaire who seems to, just reading the tea leaves, be upset by the amount of rentals on Nantucket and the folks that come with the rentals where they're partying, or his traditional Nantucket experience has been put a damper on that because of these rentals. And then you've got on the other side another very successful millionaire who owns many rental properties, who is obviously against this. And
I love when millionaires fight billionaires.
Yeah.
Which side do you think leaked this to the Journal?
I wonder which one.
Which side do you think leaked this? It's a good question.
I would guess the side that just lost.
So here is, again, this is not, when we're talking about both sides of this, we're not talking about average middle class issues that they're really fighting on here. We're talking about, you know, not, oh, the affordability of Nantucket. It's not that. It's, hey, I'm trying to make a boatload of money renting places, mm-hmm. or I own a place that's worth a boatload of money. Get off my lawn.
Right.
That's pretty much what it is. It's not, hey, there's too many short-term rentals in Cambridge and you're pricing out long-time residents. It's two really wealthy sides that are arguing about whether they want to protect the privacy of the island or the ability to make a bunch of money off the island.
I would be really interested to hear, and we have some clients who are in that 20% who are, you know, lifelong Nantucket residents, what their feeling would be on it, because the agendas of the two folks that we're talking about here, who are the proponents of it, you know, we kind of get where they stand, but I'd be interested to hear what that 20% thinks. I mean, ultimately, you can tell by the vote, the way the majority thought that this was defeated, that short-term rentals are here to stay for the moment. It does appear that this will be challenged again, but as a whole, the island seems to be siding with the idea to allow for that rental to be in place.
Yeah, and I think, again, with something like this, it's such a unique location and situation because, again, this isn't like Somerville saying, hey, we want to reduce the number of our short-term rentals. You reduce the number of short-term rentals in Somerville, the city's fine. They don't depend on Airbnb for their livelihood. Some people do, obviously, in that area. But ultimately, Nantucket is about tourism. That's the whole thing there.
Right.
Yeah, it's not the whole economy, but it's a big chunk. And so I think that this is really interesting just to see, you know, how this develops in the future here in terms of, I don't think this is the last that we've seen of talk about these kinds of restrictions and things like that.
No question. I would imagine that the reason for the no vote is people like Tucker and myself, we go visit. That is what fuels the economy. And these billionaires or some of the wealthy homeowners, that's not really what gets it done. And that's how the vote reflected, at least.
Tucker, you should, go and ask some locals what they think about it just to, you know, see. You could do a little on-site research when you're there in a couple weeks.
Maybe I could.
Just how you want to spend your vacation,
I could
right?
do that, Chuck.
You yep. know, I'm reassigning
I'm
your vacation.
I'm only going for 2 days, you know.
This is now a job assignment.
Have to find the 1,000 people and get back to us.
That's your assignment.
I'd like you to conduct an informal poll yes. that will sponsor.
I'll conduct the interviews. I probably won't remember them.
Fine by me. Folks, want to talk to you about the latest guide from the Armstrong Advisory Group that's available. If you've retired recently, or if you're thinking about retirement, you probably have questions about how to make sure that you're maximizing the value of your portfolio. Specifically, trying to figure out how do you be as efficient as possible when it comes to taxes. You might have a few different types of retirement accounts. Maybe you've got a 401k or 403b. Maybe there's a Roth IRA floating around. Maybe you just have some after-tax money. And you're trying to figure out, hey, how does this all fit together? Where do I actually start taking income from once I'm retired? Our latest guide, it's titled Building an Income Distribution Strategy. And that's what it's about. It's about figuring out, where do you start to take the money from in retirement to make sure you're being tax efficient and responsible with your portfolio in retirement? Two ways to get it. Call 800-393-4001 or go to armstrongadvisory.com. Once you're there, there's a button there that says monthly guide. Click that button and then you can download this guide for free. It's titled Building an Income Distribution Strategy, and you can get it by going to armstrongadvisory.com or calling 800-393-4001.
Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, and advisory services offered through Securities America Advisors Incorporated. Securities America and its representatives do not provide tax advice. Therefore, it is important to coordinate with your tax advisor regarding your specific situation. Charles Zotto, representative. Armstrong Advisory Group and the Securities America companies are unaffiliated.
Paul, I'm going to skip ahead a few stories. Sorry, I'm pulling a Barry right now. The story about airlines plowing billions of dollars into flying taxis. Okay. Want to talk about this for a few different reasons. Tucker, how many years have we been talking about flying taxis? I know Barry's always been fascinated.
I want to say, so I've been there 6 years now, and I want to say 6 years we've been talking about this.
Okay. Paul.
Yes.
Flying taxi. Just on the surface, are you in favor or against?
In favor.
Why?
Ooh.
Ease of good. Ease of transportation. And I think it would be cool.
It would be cool.
It would be really cool, man.
It would be cool. This is what...
Hard-hitting takes.
Welcome to the Friday show, Paul. It's good to have you on board, finally. Flying taxis. Any concerns about flying taxis dropping out of the sky left and right?
Nah.
I should just stick on the it should be cool path. There's some concern, obviously.
Any concern about, hey, you're just minding your own business and all of a sudden you just, on a beautiful summer day, and you just get a line of flying taxis coming through a big airway?
There's certainly a lot of barriers to entry. You'd have to really regulate the skies and make sure that everything's on the up and up. But, it would be awesome.
Would they be yellow and checkered as well?
I hope not. I don't understand our desire to fill the one part of the earth that you have a little bit of peace right now, being the sky, with noise and congestion.
I mean, have you seen Blade Runner 2049 or Fifth Element?
Did anyone not think those are cautionary tales?
No, I think it's a preview.
You're all over this. We've done this with drones too.
Hate them.
Where you're very against
I
that as
value
well.
That I like the fact that on a nice summer day I can go to the beach and the only disruption there is going to be the guy towing the sign that says, go to Jim's Clam Shack. We've got lobster rolls, 2 for $7 or something. Probably more than that.
$2 for $7? That's a deal.
Yeah, do they even have that at McDonald's? I don't think so. I'm trying to figure out what problem this is solving. Because
they're stating that it's supposed to be for congestion in cities like, New York City and other ones out there. Boston doesn't have the same kind of congestion, and I guess driving around.
But how many of these can you have?
You definitely have to put obviously you have to put a cap on them at some point. I would imagine that the regulations that are going to be implemented would put a number so that you can still have your beautiful view of the sky.
I mean, what if it was only like 5 cabs?
Then it's not solving the congestion problem.
It depends how many people you're putting in the cabs.
They're cabs, not planes, Tucker. We're not talking about 737s here.
It seems
if
like
it's in the sky, it's a plane.
Okay, what am I going to do? Fly a 737 from LaGuardia to Islip just to avoid going over the bridge?
Yeah, that's right.
It seems like just an...
Actually, LaGuardia's on the... It's not even avoiding a bridge. Like, what are we doing here?
I don't know. A lot of money's going into it, though. It's happening. Wheels are in motion.
I don't see this as either A, solving the congestion problem, B, it's going to be ridiculously expensive.
It's going to be like a helicopter ride. It's the same. It's the same sort of idea.
Why don't we just call these helicopters?
Because flying taxis is cool.
I know they're not really because they don't have the single rotor and I
they
get
look
it.
They look very similar.
I guess I see this as just trying too hard to make reality like the Jetsons instead of saying, hey, this doesn't actually fix anything for anyone. That's my view on it. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Paul LaMonica from CNN Business about my favorite fast food establishment, Wendy's, right after this.
Wow.
Business and financial news affecting the markets and your wallet. We got it all straight from Wall Street, right here on the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
The fastest, easiest way to get to Nantucket is back. Fly Southern Airways Express from Norwood, Providence, New Bedford, and now a brand new route from Hanscom Field. Spring is here, and it's a great time to plan a day trip or a weekend on the island without the hassles and high fares of flying from Boston. Southern Airways Express will provide you a first-class experience that is sure to make you a frequent island hopper. Take off for Nantucket today from Norwood, Providence, New Bedford, and now their brand new route from Hanscom Field. Fast flights, low fares. Book today at iFlySouthern.com.
Don't worry about dealing with taxes when you retire. Take the steps you need to take now to build a plan that maintains the income you need while also preparing you for possible tax issues down the road. Call the Armstrong Advisory Group today at 800-393-4001 and get their new guide, Building an Income Distribution Strategy. That's 800-393-4001. Or download it right now at armstrongadvisory.com. Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated. Member FINRA SIPC. And advisory services offered through Securities America Advisors Incorporated. Securities America and its representatives do not provide tax advice. Therefore, it is important to coordinate with your tax advisor regarding your specific situation. Michael Armstrong, representative. Armstrong Advisory Group and the Securities America companies are unaffiliated.
Business news, financial news, and what it means to you on the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
This segment of the Financial Exchange is brought to you in part by Southern Airways Express, now with flights from Hanscom Field off I-95. If you live north or west of Boston or in southern New Hampshire or Maine, Hanscom Field is the hassle-free way for you to get to Nantucket. Our producer Tucker is going there next week. I hope he is flying Southern Airways Express. Fast flights, low fares. Book today at iFlySouthern.com.
We're joined now by Paul LaMonica from CNN Business here to talk about, as I said previously, my favorite fast food establishment, Wendy's. Paul, how are you?
Good, thanks. You love those Biggie Shakes?
Oh, no, the Junior Bacon Cheeseburger. That's my
couple JBCs.
That's what it's all about. You get three of those, and you're pretty much in a good spot. Paul, let's talk a little bit about what we're seeing with Wendy's stock here this week, because it has been a little bit of a wild ride. It's gotten a little bit of action over the last few days here, going from $23 a share on Monday up to almost 30 on Tuesday, and now back down to $23.93 today. This is just another instance of Wall Street Bets on Reddit kind of making its presence known, huh?
That's what it appears to be, yeah. It's been a tremendously wild ride for Wendy's. And what I find fascinating about it is that this is not the type of company that you would normally see the Wall Street Bets crowd targeting. Is, you know, they have gone after or tried to push higher a lot of companies that have a fair amount of short interest. And they kind of play it as this epic battle between the good retail WSB crowd and the evil short sellers. But, you know, look at Wendy's. It's not heavily shorted, and its top investor is a hedge fund, Trian, who Nelson Peltz is not shorting Wendy's, obviously, because he's the controlling investor, but he has had, you know, short targets in the past. So this is a case where the WSB crowd is actually aligning themselves with a top hedge fund, which I do find interesting. And we could talk, you know, why that's the case if you want.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. What's the thesis that they have then about why they think this might be a good bet for them?
Yeah, the interesting thing, and this is where I think there is a similarity with a lot of the heavily shorted stocks. There are some people on Reddit who've astutely noted that this is a company that there isn't a huge float. You have the big institutional firms there that are large investors, as well as the insiders in Nelson Peltz. So as one Reddit user wrote, frenzy plus scarcity plus low volume means minimal buys could push the price quickly. And they went on, you know, a lot of the users to tout that, they like how Wendy's social media team is pretty amusing. They're often joking about McDonald's and some of their competitors. They're, you know, you look at the Wendy's Twitter feed and they describe themselves, we like our tweets the same way we like to make our hamburgers, better than anyone expects from a fast food joint. And then, you know, as silly as this is, it's investing circa 2021. Tendies is the term that a lot of people on Reddit use for to describe their profits. And, you know, you could also call chicken nuggets a tendy. So as something as dumb as that it can be a reason for a meme stock.
Tendies at Wendy's, the story of investing in 2021, I guess.
Yes. Warren Buffett, if you're listening, I know it's painful to hear.
Paul, appreciate you joining us. Have a fantastic weekend.
Thanks a lot. Same to you, guys.
It's Paul LaMonica from CNN Business talking about Wendy's.
I mean, if Wendy's is smart, they get all over that marketing.
I don't
Tendies
know.
At Wendy's?
Oh, that marketing, yes.
Yeah, what did you think I was talking about?
I thought you were talking about like more leaning into...
Pumping up the stock.
The stock talk and
no,
stuff.
No. But if you use the term tendies, and just like, you're referring to it, but you know, we're talking about it. Our tendies.
Yep. Honestly, they should do something where for a week they just rename the company Tendies. Yeah. You know, like IHOP did. What did they change themselves to?
Oh.
IHOB was it?
IHOB. Yeah. It was International House of Burgers.
Yeah, Wendy should change the name to Tendies for a week.
There you go.
Or a day, whatever. I don't know, something. The Dow is off 51 points. The S&P is down 1. NASDAQ is up 8. It's a quiet Friday here, just the way we like it in the summer. Everyone have a fantastic weekend. We're back at it Monday. We'll see you then.